Welcome to episode 76, the year I was born, the year of the dragon. Episode 76 of the Extra Sequential podcast. My name is Chris. I'm coming from Perth, and coming from Melbourne is a guy called Maladdin.
That's me. So, Chris, happy Chinese New Year.
Gong Xi Fa Cai.
Very good. And happy Indian Republic Day.
Oh, okay.
Did you know that's actually on the 26th of January as well as Australia Day? Isn't that cool? But we're not talking about Indian nationalism, Australian nationalism, or Chinese New Year. So we're covering creative differences on this week's show.
Well, obviously, comics are a collaborative medium. Some would say perhaps the most collaborative, really, because, you know, you've got very few people working together quite closely on a kind of shared vision. And sometimes, you know, Maladdin, when people work closely together, sparks fly. Some of those sparks make fires. Some of those fires are uncontrollable. And some of those fires burn bridges. Ooh, that's pretty good.
We'll be talking about that later in the show and some famous cases of writer and artists bickering and crying like little babies and then announcing and bad-mouthing each other in the press, which seems to be a common theme for a few of the gents on my list.
Correct.
And normally we'd follow up with the news, but here at Extra Sequential, we're a democratic podcast. We want to throw it out to the Extra Sequential listeners. From this point on, the power is in your hands. Would you prefer us to cover, at the start of each show, the comic book news or a short what we've been reading segment quickly, just sort of saying Chris something interesting Chris and I read this week of a comic, I guess, recommendations of this week's new comics. So we'd like to hear what you would prefer to hear, basically. If you catch up on the podcast, you know, months after they've come out and the news is completely out of date, tell us and then we'll do what we've been reading. Whereas if you rely on us for for all the news,
cutting edge
news and humour, please, please let us know too. Shall we get into this topic then?
Yes, we shall.
Say that I was so wrong.
Well, I was going to say this is quite a timely topic because this week in particular there have been a couple of examples.
Yeah, that's right. Rob Liefeld and Robert Kirkman recently ended their title The Infinite announced on Twitter, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was kind of their... They both had different visions about what they wanted. And writer John Rosen, who was writing the new Static Shock series, he also quit as a writer. And he's been pretty honest about the, behind-the-scenes shenanigans going on DC Comics as well. So I'll put both of those links if you want to read up more. But, yeah, it sounds like, I mean, especially these days, you know, making grievances public is a lot more common now. You know, obviously we have this thing called the internet. We have conventions. And, you know, it's not basically just Marvel or DC. So if you burn the bridges of Marvel, then you can go to DC or vice versa, but there's so many more publishers now. So I guess creators are being a lot more vocal than they ever used to in the past, or perhaps they used to be vocal, but obviously before the days of the internet, you know, in those bygone era, perhaps none of us ever knew about it. But now, and it seems a lot more prevalent to me that comics creators are a lot more vocal and perhaps nasty to one another at times. Not all of them. It is a minority, but it seems more prevalent than, say, in the movie business or in the music business. I guess we've got millions of dollars at stake there and, you know, people's reputations are at stake, so people are a lot less inclined to badmouth the studio head or whatever. But I don't know, perhaps people in comics, it's a smaller thing and egos are bigger, so they feel they can get away with it. So, yeah, it's certainly an interesting perhaps phenomenon in the comics biz, I feel.
Yeah, I think you're right. I've noticed before the Comics Journal magazine, Gary Groft's publication, there was very little, I guess, outlet for comics creators to really publicly let people know, hey, Stan Lee's a douche and he slept with my wife, which I'm sure has happened. But if that happened today, it would be all over the internet, or if it happened in the 80s, the Comics Journal. But in the 70s, there was no recourse, you know. It's not going to be covered on TV. Yeah. It's interesting to note as there are more avenues for people to voice their opinions, usually without a lot of forethought or worry of what's this going to do to another person's reputation. Maybe I should be careful what I say because it's a small world, the comic business.
Yeah, it is. And we saw it recently with John Michael Straczynski, who was writing Spider-Man for a while for Marvel, and he just made a quick comment, I think, on his Facebook page just saying, No, when I was writing Spider-Man, the Cybermen are up here, and now they're up here, just saying. And then all these ex-Marvel writers and stuff kind of got on and said, James, you can't just say something like that. You know, you're diminishing the great work people are doing now, blah, blah, blah. And then he took down the post. But and obviously, you know, comic readers are huge commenters. If you just visit, you know, Comic Book Resources or Bleeding Cool or Comics Lines or Newsarama or whatever, people like to comment. And and they like to get involved in this kind of argument. I guess they like to see the kind of respected writers and artists show their human frustrated side at times. Mm-hmm. It's pretty interesting. But I thought before we get into splits, we could get into unions. Let's kick things off on a happy note. Let's reminisce when Mummy and Daddy were together. So I've made up a quick list of frequent collaborators, Vlad, and writers and artists that actually work together quite a lot to say, hey, it can be done, people.
Yeah, go on.
So Mark Millar, Scottish writer Mark Millar, I think it's actually pronounced Mark Millar, but he works with the same artist quite a lot. He worked with Steve McNiven on the Marvel superhero beat-em-up series Civil War. He worked with him on Old Man Logan, the future Wolverine series that we discussed on The End podcast, and also lately, lastly, Nemesis. He worked with John Romita Jr. on Wolverine and Kick-Ass. He worked with Brian Hitch on two volumes of The Ultimates, as well as Fantastic Four. And he worked with Lionel Francis Yu a lot on Ultimate Comics Avengers, the second volume, also Ultimate Comics Avengers versus New Ultimates, and the new series that's coming out in March called Super Crooks. Mike Mignola and Duncan Figueredo have worked together quite a lot for Dark Horse on various Hellboy miniseries, The Darkness Calls and Wild Hunt, which came out 2007 and 2008, and the last of the trilogy last year's Hellboy The Fury, which promises this year is going to be the year of the Hellboy. And finally, Morrison and Quietly, Grant Morrison and Frank Quietly, they've worked together quite a lot on New X-Men from Marvel, We Three, which we both loved, All-Star Superman and Batman and Robin more recently. So there are a lot of kind of writer-artists that do their kind of, you know, I just forgot the name of the singer, so Paul McCartney and John Lennon, you know, they kind of work together well. So it's good to see.
So it's interesting that you brought up Paul McCartney and John Lennon as a team that work together well.
I know they've had their differences, but when they do work together well, magic happens. That's what I'm saying.
And then they fell apart disastrously. So it kind of works well with this topic. I mean, it's curious to see whether some of the creative teams you mentioned will ever have any of this problems that the following ones we're going to mention might do, because these things pop up and people have long memories and elephant never forgets. The first elephant in the room, and I guess he pops up on both of our lists, but with different people, would be Alan Moore. Now, Alan Moore, he's an interesting character. I think he's actually one of those few who tends to kind of keep his opinion to himself, unless if directly asked or if someone else says something first. He was always the type to never badmouth anyone he worked with, unless if they badmouthed him first, then it was, you know, free game. And Alan Moore and Steve Bissett have worked on the saga of the Swamp Thing in the 1980s proto-Vertigo line from DC Comics. And it was a collaborative effort, really. Bissett's influences ranged from not just the art, but kind of the storytelling and scripting, and it really gelled with Moore's poetic plotting. They were a really good partnership in terms of words and picture. The comic, which seems to be a major part to why they eventually split, is one called 1963. I don't know if you've heard of it. Yeah. Yeah, this is the last comic they worked together with Rick Veitch, I should say, for Image. It was their counterbalance against Watchmen to undo some of the negative impacts Moore felt that Watchmen had made. So Bissett had confirmed that it was always Moore that Image Comics wanted as part of what he describes as their comics industry chess game amongst themselves and all the editorial infighting, which would lead to the company splitting. More on that later. But Veitch and Bissett felt that they were just there to help ease Moore into the company. So the series went for 6 issues in 93, and a 7th annual was due, and that 7th annual never quite landed. There was a whole kerfuffle with the art and whether Jim Lee would be on board to illustrate it, and Alan Moore was busy with his other projects, and then it was never drawn. After that series, Bissett did a log interview of the Comics Journal in 96, and the Comics Journal has caused, I think, more beefs and battles than anything else in comics and science fiction, bar anything else. There's a long war between Harlan Ellison and Peter David, I believe, that you can read about. But in which that interview, he discussed the limitations of working as a writer in comics, the details of publishing from hell, in Steve Bissett was the first to publish From Hell in the pages of Taboo in a periodical form. I've only been able to track down an excerpt from the interview since my tiny collection of Comics Journal doesn't go quite that far back. But it seems that Moore was very upset with the things that Bissett revealed about the internal workings behind Moore's work, his opinions on their relationship. Bissett's added in other interviews that he thinks the success of McFarlane's Spawn, which I should mention Alan Moore wrote a guest issue of, and then after which he had lots and lots of image work lined up for him, Bissett felt that Moore wasn't really interested in pursuing any of their joint projects together. So anyway, Moore calls up Steve Bissett after this interview is released, and he goes, "Right, Steve, I'll keep this short. Don't call me, don't write me. As far as I'm concerned, it's over, mate." Now, that's one where the details are a little bit hazy as to exactly what Moore was offended about. But I think in broad terms, he was probably a bit annoyed that Bissett was revealing all their inner workings of how they worked together as a team and Moore as a writer. I know you've got Moore on your list as well.
Yeah, but I don't have any reasons for why he doesn't work together with David Gibbons anymore. They worked together, obviously, on Watchmen 1986 miniseries, which obviously became the 2009 film, and they also worked together on Superman, The Man Who Has Everything, which I think we also discussed in the End series, Pat. Mm. And he Gibbons actually did do, I think in 2005 and 2006, there was a six-issue limited series called Albion, which I think had looked at old kind of UK superheroes that kind of weren't used anymore. I haven't read it. So Gibbons actually did the cover art for that, and Leah Moore, who's Alan Moore's daughter, and her husband, John Repian, actually co-plotted and wrote that series along with Alan Moore. But I'd imagine that, I mean, Gibbons was quite active in the Watchmen film that came out in 2009, directed by Zack Snyder. A lot of people will obviously be familiar with Alan Moore, washed his hands with it. In fact, you won't even see his name in the credits.
Yeah.
It just says, based on the series, I think, co-created by Dave Gibbons. Yeah, Alan Moore's name doesn't even show up in it. But Gibbons was a consultant for the film. He did a lot of kind of behind-the-scenes work. He released a book when the film came out about all of his sketches and stuff again, or the behind-the-scenes work that he kept when he was working with Alan Moore, all their notes and stuff. So he released a coffee table book. So I don't know if Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons will work together again, but they do good work together when they do. I would imagine that, yeah, it's kind of the same scenario, that perhaps not as chummy as they once were, because Alan Moore is a bit more of a recluse, whereas Dave Gibbons is a, yeah, I'm on board for this.
Yeah, I think he distances himself from anyone who is a bit wanting the limelight, I suppose. Once the artists, even, say, Brian Bolland, who he's worked with quite a bit and so forth, I assume they're all still on friendly terms. He likes to find artists who aren't, I don't know if it's an ego thing. I don't want to say too many negative things about Alan Moore, because I think he's actually quite gentlemanly, except for like the persona that people push onto him. He seems a little bit more polite than others give him credit for in terms of interviewing and his opinions and so forth. But I wonder if part of it is that he likes just writing with young artists who need the work and are willing to just do what he says, because we know Alan Moore's scripts are very, very detailed and controlling, and understandably so. He's got a vision of his own, but he's still working constantly with Kevin O'Neill.
Yes, Legal Extraordinary Gentleman. Yes,
yeah.
True.
Yeah, regularly with him. So, I don't want to read into it, but this whole Steve Bissett thing, it seems to come from things disclosed that shouldn't have been disclosed. And I'm sure that'll feed into a few of the other examples here.
The only one that I really have an example of why, for a concrete reason, if they don't work together anymore, is writer Mark Raid and painter/artist Alex Ross. They did, obviously, Kingdom Come. We, I believe, devoted a whole episode to that. That was a four-issue miniseries that came out for DC Comics in 1996. It's a future set DC Comics series, and all the superheroes, Superman's retired, he comes back, all that kind of thing. The series was, when it first came out, it was astronomically successful. Alex Ross kind of worked on Marvels before that, which was the kind of looking at the kind of the early years of the Marvel Universe in the 60s. So the formation of the X-Men and all that, kind of from a general man on the street point of view, and that was pretty interesting. So yeah, Kingdom Come was the DC equivalent, I guess, was set in the future. So there was a sequel, obviously, because the Kingdom Come was so popular. So Mark Waid and Alex Ross together actually began to plot a sequel slash a prequel, which followed some of the characters from Kingdom Come called The Kingdom, which is just going to be a series of miniseries and one-shots. And I've got the big kind of omnibus deluxe edition of Kingdom Come, and there's a lot of kind of background info and behind the scenes, but also if you just do a quick Wikipedia search, thank you, Wiki, you can certainly see what Alex Ross's intent was for the series, which I won't go into here because it's a bit complex. But yeah, as they were kind of working on the series and where it would go, basically the pair kind of disagreed on several of the big concepts, and Alex Ross basically decided to leave the project. So Mark Waid went ahead anyway, and he continued the story in a few different miniseries, which was written by Mark Waid with art by Ariel Olivetti and Mike Zeck, which are good, but obviously nowhere near as good as Kingdom Come. And Ross criticised publicly a few of the different things that Mark Waid decided to do on it, which he didn't agree with. So,
for example,
the good thing about this...
For example, I'm curious what he disagreed with.
Ross criticised things like Superman and Wonder Woman get together in the story. They're both in the future. They're like 40, 50 years old, and they have a kid, which is hinted at in the Kingdom Come series, but obviously discussed in more detail. So Ross thought that, you know, because this would be like a big thing, so Ross thought that Superman and Wonder Woman wouldn't make it public, that they keep their child a secret so they have a normal life. But Mark Waid thought, oh no, this would be like a big, you know, world event, and they'll have a lot of people going around, and it'll be like this big media circus. And Ross actually wanted a number of the characters to be killed, whereas Mark Waid wanted a few to be alive and that kind of thing. So, so yeah, that was... you know, Kingdom Come was such an awesome comic. I know you disagree. But there's a chance that the two of them may reunite, Milan. The mummy and daddy may get back together. Dynamite Entertainment, Alex Ross has actually been working with them for a while now. They do The Green Hornet, The Last Phantom. They're doing The Shadow this year, Lone Ranger. They do quite a lot of the old kind of pulpy heroes. And Dynamite have actually reunited the Marvels team of Kurt Busiek, right, and Alex Ross. Alex Ross had a coffee table book released late last year about showcasing all his cover art for Dynamite, and Mark Waid actually did a blurb on the back of the coffee table book saying what an awesome collaborator he is. So perhaps whatever bad blood is there has gone, so it'd be good to see those two back together, because they're both, you know, Mark Waid has always been one of my favourite writers.
It seems that Split was based more on less about personality and more about the direction of the story, which is interesting considering, say, the role that Alan Moore as a writer demands of his artists. Even though it's often collaborative, it seems that the Alex Ross, Mark Waid partnership was very, very much collaborative in terms of the story. Although he did, Mark Waid did just carry it on without him. So there's probably, it only goes to a point, I suppose. He still ditched him, got found another artist, I guess, in the end. So that's how these things turn out, people. Don't fight too much or you'll be replaced with a younger, faster model.
Well, the same thing happened in, 91, I think, when Marvel relaunched X-Men. And they had the first X-Men number one series, which is one of the highest selling in the millions of copies, written by Chris Claremont and with art by Jim Lee. And then Jim Lee was kind of at the height of his popularity, I guess, back then. And everybody wanted to work with him, and Marvel loved him. But he wanted the story to go differently. Chris Claremont, as a obviously cherished writer, had been writing X-Men for years at that point, said, I want to do this. So Marvel said, okay, we think the art is selling more copies than the script. So see you later, Chris Claremont. Jim Lee, it's all yours now. And, yeah, got somebody else on to write it for him. So I guess it just depends who has more power, who's more popular.
Yeah, I think that's the case. It's interesting you brought up Jim Lee, because that kind of segues nicely into the whole bevy of artists involved in the creative differences with Marvel, which led to the formation of Image Comics. That whole scenario began as a union of several freelancers, all of whom were on very popular titles and doing very popular work on them, among them Todd McFarlane, Rob Liefeld, Jim Lee, Mark Silvestri, Eric Larson, etc. They were disappointed, I think, more so that they weren't being paid any merchandising on their original creations, only paid rates for their artwork. And you can see that since with Todd McFarlane, who's he's branched out into toys and film licenses and so forth, and found a lucrative character in Spawn, but also kind of satisfying his, I guess, his artistic vision of what he wants in a comic. But within Image, there was quite a bit of pushing and pulling, basically. I don't think they really sorted out who was in charge early on. They all had their own titles they could run, and they wouldn't interfere with each other. But then at one point, they were all trying to get the star artists and star writers outside of Image involved. And I mentioned Alan Moore before. Bringing Moore to Image was a huge deal. I'm trying to remember who the editor was on 1963.
It's
not, no idea. It's not coming to me. It doesn't matter. But I know that Todd McFarlane and Jim Lee both wanted him on their own projects. So there's a little bit of underhandedness within that company, which led to them all eventually disbanding. Jim Lee left, formed Wildstorm, was it? I mean, what are your thoughts on kind of the egos behind Image, whether a different group of people might have made it work in that early form? Because since then, I mean, Eric Larson and Todd McFarlane are obviously still there, and most of the original crew have gone off and pursued different projects. Do you think that was only natural, or is that just a case of people should have put their egos aside and tried to work a bit more cooperatively?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of egos, as you said. Jim Lee created Wildstorm, and then DC bought it out. Now he's one of the head honchos of DC Comics. Mm. Rob Liefeld has been doing work for Marvel for a while now, and now we know DC, as we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they started with good intentions. They wanted more power. They realized that their pages were selling these millions of comics, literally. And when Image first started, yeah, it was massive. It was like, it was huge. It was like Jack Kirby leaving Marvel for DC. And they did do very well initially, but books ran late and they weren't businessmen.
Mm.
And they weren't writers. So, and a lot of the books back then in the early 90s were pretty bad. But Image have certainly thrived so much. And they're like one of the most diverse publishers in comics. And then they're just amazing. You know, you can find much more kind of indie stuff and non-superhero stuff coming from Image than any other publisher, really. So they've done very well for themselves. But certainly back then in the early 90s, it was very shaky.
Okay, I've got an example here, which I guess is quite recent, and it's two Scotsmen. Can you guess who I'm going to say?
Billy Connolly and Scrooge McDuck.
Oh, okay, no. Mark Millar and Grant Morrison, you were so close.
Yes.
Oh. They're two Glasgow natives. Glasgow, I can't say it.
Glasgow.
They worked together and co-wrote Judge Dredd, 2000 AD, Swamp Thing back in 94, The Flash. I was going to say The Flush. Skrull, Kill Crew. And I know they did some stories for Vampirella in the mid 90s somewhere. And they've been writing partners and close friends for quite a while. And they've since stopped working together, and it seems to be a few different reasons and a few different things that were said that can't be unsaid.
Mm.
It seems like the issue came to a head over the authorship of The Authority. Apparently, Morrison ghostwrote some issues of the series when Millar was ill, and he hasn't been properly credited on those, but there does seem to be more involved with Morrison's position on comics being turned into films. And we know that Mark Millar is a huge fan of that, with Kick-Ass so forth, and fishing for properties.
Wanted
exactly. There's a few interesting Grant Morrison quotes. So he was saying, "It breaks my heart to see so many of our best and brightest bowing down to the same market pressures which drive lowest common denominator blockbuster movies and television cop shows. Let's make artifacts that are not faux games or movies, but something other." And he mentioned in another interview that a lot of comics are like cheesy pitch documents for movies that were never going to get made. And we sort of wonder if Millar took ire to those statements. I mean, do you see that those could be aimed at anyone in particular, or is it just an accident?
Oh, Mark Millar's in love with Hollywood. There's no doubt about that. I mean, he's pretty much seems every comic he creates these days. I mean, he's creating his own convention, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't he? Kapow.
Yeah.
He's got Millar World titles, Superior Nemesis, Wanted, Kick-Ass, create his own magazine, Clint. Like a schoolboy, happy to be playing with the big boys. And I think when he first started, Grant Morrison was almost like a mentor for him, wasn't he?
Yeah, and there's an interview in Rolling Stone where they ask Morrison, because they live in the same city, they asked if you ever bump into each other and is that awkward? And Morrison said, there's a very good chance of running into him and I hope I'm going 100 miles an hour when it happens. And I hope that was jokingly and not a death threat.
Yes. Yeah. Let's talk about Batman. Much like yourself, I guess I grew up in comics in the 90s and also DC comics in the 90s. So, and we both kind of love Batman of that era. So Alan Grant, another well-known artist, Nombre Fogel, they kind of, well, basically Detective Comics, one of DC's flagship series, was basically dying when they came on board. And they worked on it together from 87 to 93. And then again from 87 to 90. And then Nombre Fogel worked on a whole bunch of stuff, Batman and Robin, and together they co-created The Ventriloquist and Scarface. They co-created Anarchy, who you don't really see anymore, unfortunately. And also Mr. Zazz is the killer who we see in Batman Begins with scars all over him. Those two haven't worked together in a long, long time. And you see this with another pair that I'll mention later, working on Batman comics in the 90s. But they did some great work. And thankfully, DC reunited the pair last year when they did their Reactive series, where they basically got together as many writers, artists of the 70s, 80s, and 90s that they could and put them together in various one-shots focused on the continuity of that time. And they did a great retroactive Batman 1990s one-shot, which I don't think you've read, Mladen, but if you're a fan of either of these characters or the Batman of the late 80s, early 90s, then you'd owe it to yourself, listeners, to pick up this great one-shot. Similarly, Chuck Dixon, we devoted an entire episode to him a while ago, and artist Graham Nolan. I think Chuck Dixon wrote hundreds of issues of Batman, and he was basically the dross of the Batman series for Detective Comics and Batman, and all throughout the Nightfall and Night's End storyline, in which Bane broke Batman's back. And much of his run there was illustrated by Graham Nolan. Thankfully, they haven't worked together for a long, long time. But they did kind of reunite more recently. The last time they worked together was a Phantom story. Yeah, Chuck Dixon, I mean, he wrote Robin. He wrote the first 70 issues for Nightwing, Batgirl. He created Birds of Prey. He did so much good work. And a lot of that was with Graham Nolan, who has this kind of very clean, realistic style, which I miss. When Paul Levitz wrote the 75 Years of DC Comics book, he didn't even mention Chuck Dixon, who for the better part of a decade, if not more, created. I mean, he created so many good of Batman characters. So it's unfortunate. But, yeah, I really like those two. They're great storytellers, great action-driven storytellers together, very simple. It's never complicated, their Batman stories. So, yeah, so that's, I guess we could all lump those together, Alan Grant, Nombre Fogel, and Chuck Dixon, and Graham Nolan. But good times, makes me want to reminisce.
We talked about Chuck Dixon in more depth, but he's one who's kind of nurtured quite a few creative differences between him and others, partially because of his political views, which are very right-wing.
Yes.
And you see these kind of political splits in comics a fair bit. I know Chuck Dixon doesn't like Grant Morrison. Alan Moore's criticised Grant. Like, they just find little nitpicky things, and right now you've got Frank Miller and Alan Moore. Frank Miller saying crazy things and Alan Moore responding to them. I don't think Frank Miller's responded to Alan Moore's response, but that's one that's not so much a... See, when we say creative difference, I should point out that's just the code people use to say we're fighting all the time so we can't work together anymore. It's the nice way of saying...
Like,
when
people get divorced, irreconcilable differences to covers anything.
Exactly. Like, mummy and daddy can't stay together, but it's not because we don't love you. It's a bit like that. You mentioned Paul Levitz in there, and Chuck Dixon and Paul Levitz have had quite a few disagreements over the years, and I know Chuck's been very vocal in criticising the direction of DC Comics during Paul Levitz's tenure. Was it the early 2000s? Somewhere around
then. He stopped working for DC,
That's right. And I know Alan Moore and Paul Levitz also had problems, and that was due to movie rights. But in Paul Levitz's defence, he was one of the key people who was always adamant against doing a Watchmen 2 a sequel comic, and he made sure during his tenure that would never happen. And since he's gone, well, expect a big release, I think, this year.
I think so. Yeah, Paul Levitz is basically, he left being the head honcho of DC a couple of years ago to be a freelance writer. He's now writing for DC. So we've seen over the pipeline on the internet over the last couple of months kind of Watchmen 2 concept art kind of trickle through. So it looks like DC will go ahead with it. Perhaps they're just gauging fan reaction. But I'm sure Dave Gibbons will probably involved somehow and Alan Moore will wash his hands of it.
Well, this is actually a good segue into what happens to the kids Now, in everyone knows after a divorce, everything gets split up between the two parents. Now, in comics, it's also another messy legal problem, and there's quite a few examples with writer-artist no longer being able to work together, and then them having to work out, okay, well, who owns what? Because as we've mentioned with a few examples, the writers, yes, they write the script, but a lot of the time the artist is heavily involved in bringing ideas to the table. So say with Alex Ross and Mark Waid, I'm sure there are quite a few original creations in that comic that are entirely Alex Ross's, or were just a word in a script that Alex Ross brought to life. And, I mean, that's nowhere better example maybe than Steve Ditko and Stan Lee with Spider-Man, who the creative partnership there, it was never under question who owned the character but who was responsible for it. So even with even if we think we know the history of who owns what, I think it's messier than it appears on the surface. I mean, you've talked about Watchmen, and Moore's told Gibbons, hey, do what you want with it, I don't care anymore. He's sort of given him whole creative right over that series, which is quite interesting. And he's been quite a gentleman, actually, even with titles where he's split, with Stephen Bissett in 1963, the comic. In 2009, they wanted to attempt to collect all of the issues in a trade paperback as well as finish the series, you know, have the last script done and the last comic drawn. Unfortunately, it didn't end up happening. But I know that when they split up on this title, Moore insisted on giving Bissett creative rights to quite a few of the characters that Bissett felt, well, I just drew what you wrote down. But Alan was like, nah, you brought a lot to the character, so you should have it. Compared to a lot of others who seem to just want to own everything, like, say, Stan Lee, for example. Do you have any thoughts that come to mind of characters who've been, or titles and comics which have just disappeared because of the creative differences?
Ooh, nothing really brings to mind. I mean, a lot of the publishers obviously own the rights. I mean, when it's Image, the creators own the characters, like Eric Larson owns Savage Dragon, Todd McFarlane owns Spawn. But if you create something for Marvel and DC, it's not yours.
It seems once the business of comics gets involved, that tends to lead to a lot of breakups, which wouldn't normally happen if it was just the creative environment. I'm sure Image Comics, if they didn't have to concentrate on the business, I'm talking at the early stages of Image, some of those creators wouldn't have had the problems with each other that they ended up having. I mean, artists and writers don't necessarily make good business people. Or fair business people, or, you know, having a talent, creative talent, doesn't mean that you can't be a bit covetous when it comes to, you know, things you've made in a collaborative setting. It's kind of a warning. Maybe, I've been noticing a lot more, in the past on independent titles. There's maybe more people just doing it alone, possibly because they're wary of the problems that come with, well, what happens if we don't get along anymore? Who owns the adventures of Mr. Carrot and the Brussels sprouts, you know?
Copyright that quick. Yeah. Yes. I did want to talk about Jeff Loeb. Callum on our Facebook page said, Jeff Loeb, for that big row with the abstract concept of decent comics, that was hard to see. Jeff Loeb's actually a writer, kind of controversial, I guess, a bit of a lightning rod, like Rob Liefeld, one of those loving or hating kind of characters in comics. I actually prefer his work, but I must admit that his earlier stuff as writers is a lot better and cleaner and more enjoyable. But if you want kind of big action and muscular men and women fighting each other, then Jeff Loeb is the guy to see. He's kind of the Michael Bay of comics for the last few years. He's worked with Ed McGuinness on Hulk and Superman, Batman, Public Enemies, and more recently the new Avengers X-Sanction miniseries, which has Cable coming back from the future to take on the Avengers. But his most famous collaboration, which hasn't seen any fruit for some time, is Tim Sale. Tim Sale and Jeff Loeb both worked together on the Heroes TV series. All the artwork that you see of the artist, whose name I forget, was it? Isaac.
I've never seen the show.
The artist in Heroes, all of his work was Tim Sale's work. So they first worked together on Challenges of the Unknown, which was a miniseries, an 8-issue miniseries in 1991. And then they went on to do a whole bunch of Batman series for DC Comics, which Batman The Long Halloween and Batman Dark Victory, which we both love, and Superman for All Seasons. Then they went on to work for Marvel in the so-called color books, which is Daredevil Yellow, Spider-Man Blue, and the last one is Hulk Gray. They were supposed to do another one in 2008 called Captain America White, but only the Zero issue was released so far. It was supposed to be a six-issue miniseries, and I'm sure we'll possibly mention this when we get around to doing kind of Lost Projects episode eventually, but it's kind of interesting. They actually do work together, and I don't know what's happened, because, I mean, Jeff Loeb's fairly busy, but you don't really see Tim Sale doing any comics, haven't you?
Yeah, not regularly.
No, he'll do the old cover and...
Short story, six-page story, kind of fill-in thing. Yeah, maybe it just doesn't need the work. See, in some of these cases, I wonder, okay, maybe there's personal issues we're not privy to, say, in their personal lives, not with each other. You know, sickness in the family and so forth. Exactly. Yeah, which is...
Jeff did have... Yeah, his young son, Sam, I believe, died when he was, I think, quite a few years ago. But, yeah. But I do have a quote here from... Sale, which he says, Jeff is unique in how well he can craft what he does to an artist's strengths and at the same time away from both his weaknesses, stray away from both an artist's weaknesses and dislikes. Plus, he's got away with words, and I think we share an interest in a certain kind of melodrama and sentiment that's found in all of the Marvel colour books. It's the idea of the main character writing a love letter to a lost one. And that's what these colour series of books from Marvel were about. We're basically focusing on the early days of these superheroes and kind of a loved one that they lost. But, yeah, they work together quite well.
It's curious that you're... are you trying to take down Callum's anti-Jeff Loeb stance on the Extra Sequential Facebook site, Chris? Is this what this is about?
I actually like him, but I must admit that I understand why a lot of people don't. But I certainly like him. I mean, he wrote Superman and Batman for the first few issues, and I love those issues. But if you're looking for a deep, emotional, kind of meta-textual, you know, deep comics, then Jeff Loeb's meant to see. But if you want all-out action and kind of big, dumb superhero books...
That's all Chris wants.
That's
in
not
life.
For everybody. Pretty much.
Yeah. And if you're after a Batman comic which isn't about a mysterious murderer and then Batman meeting all of his villains, don't go to Jeff Loeb. And he also wrote Teen Wolf 2, which is unforgivable. So,
and Commando. You got any more examples?
Well, maybe a webcomic example. I know the creators behind Mega Tokyo Split. And what's more interesting there is that the original artist left, he had problems with the way the direction of the comic was going, and what they did, he's the former writer, Rodney Caston, and he left it and then signed off all his rights to the comic to Fred Gallagher, who's the current owner. And there was a bit of a kerfuffle over why they left, but it seems like that's one case where someone bought someone else out in the end, which is the way to not leave any feelings hurt, rather than taking things to court. Go, look, I'll pay you a fair price for your share of this character, and then we can both wipe our hands of it. And that's probably a better solution than duking it out for decades in the legal system. I mean, we've recently saw Kirby... Well, that wasn't recent, I guess. The Kirby heirs, I should say, and their court case and the Shusters and Siegel and Shusters and so forth. I mean... If you can solve it with yourselves, please do so. This is a plea to all these creative teams. Thank you.
For listening. If you have any examples of yourself, just email us, chris@extrasequential.com, or make a comment on the Facebook page, or check us out on iTunes. And as we said at the top of the show, tell us if you want news or what we've been reading and or watching or playing or listening to that has kind of picked our fancy recently. Tell us what you want and we'll do it for you. We are the genie and you are Aladdin.
The power's in your hands, folks. And thank you, everyone, who stuck through the show with even through all the little technical glitches you may have heard. We'll get those ironed out by next week, I hope.
Yes.
So,
thanks for listening, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Future shows, extrasequential.com. Facebook, music for the show is at purgeaudit.com. And if you have any suggestions for topics, let us know. We love to get your hate mail to chris@extrasequential.com. Thanks, everyone. You'll hear us next week.
Bye-bye. Yeah.